Welcome to Living Queer, where we explore what it means to be queer in today's world. I'm your host, Erwin De Leon, and today we're joined by the Executive Director of Mongolia's first queer organization, the LGBT Center of Mongolia, Inkma Inkbald. Inkma, welcome. It's so wonderful to see you, albeit in Zoom.
Hi, Erwin. It's very good to be here.
Wonderful. Now, we met at the Safer to Be Me Summit last month. Can't believe it's been a month. The LGBT plus human rights summit held in the UK that brought together activists, organizational leaders such as yourself, academics like me, allies, and members of the queer collective from all over the world. How was the experience for you? How does it feel to be back in Ulaanbaatar, Mongolia right now?
Well, first of all, the weather is completely different here. Mongolia is located in the far north of Asia. So we are between Russia and China, between two powers.
Yeah.
So right now it's snowing and it's quite cold. And it's nice to be back to work. It's always like during conferences, I get a lot of new ideas. I get inspired by panelists and meet new activists. So yeah, it's very nice to be back home. Of course, loads of work is waiting for me. And it is 9 p.m. and I'm still working.
And we are grateful that you're joining us. So you mean it's more bone-chilling in Mongolia than it was in Newcastle?
Oh, yeah, absolutely, yes. We reach, in the city, we reach negative about 35 Celsius.
Oh, my goodness. That's, yes. Yeah, it's more than just layering, isn't it?
Yeah.
So you mentioned like learning or being inspired. So what was one thing from the conference that, I guess, stood out for you, inspired you, or gave you new ideas?
You know, I have been around. I am a seasoned activist in a way. So I've been in regional and international spaces, many different conferences, but I have never come across a panel on Russia before.
Mm-hmm.
So during the conference, there was a panel on Russia,
mm-hmm.
and Russia is our neighbor,
yes,
to the north, and yes, it was inspiring. We had activists from the region, from the country.
No, well, I definitely share that. Like one of the wonderful things for me was meeting, I guess, comrades like yourself and others from around the world. Well, you mentioned Russia, and in a way, it's related to my next question, right? So what is it like to live as a genderqueer person in Mongolia, to be a queer person in Mongolia? Because when I've read a little about the LGBT history in Mongolia, it seems on paper a bit more progressive than Russia or China. But then to your point, Russia's, I'd imagine, exerts some influence.
Definitely, we are on paper quite progressive, not only compared to our neighbors, but within the Asia-Pacific region.
Mm-hmm.
We decriminalized homosexuality more than 30 years ago. We have legislations that have provisions on anti-discrimination, which includes sexual orientation and gender identity, namely our criminal code, labor law, personal data protection law. And in addition to that, we have Mongolia actually became a first country in the Asia Pacific region to adopt a human rights defender law in 2021. So this is a great progress. If you really think about, we've been socialist country for 70 years, and our democracy is very, very young. Actually, our democracy is younger than me. So within just like 35 years of democracy, LGBTQI activists definitely made great progress in the legal reforms and also social I don't know. How do you say it? Social
and culture, society?
Yeah, like we definitely influenced the narratives of how LGBTQI people are being seen. And but I named like great legislations and mentioned great progress. However, this is definitely progress. However, now we need to focus on whether if these legislations are actually working on the ground or not. So that's one of the things the center does. We monitor legislations, we try working with government agencies and all sectors of service providers. And yeah, so for me, as an activist, I want to also bring in my intersecting identities. I'm 40 years old. I have a full-time job. I do speak a couple of languages, yada, 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 which allows me to, you know, having a full-time job, like I can afford to live in a safer neighborhood and all that. Yeah. So for me, not bad. But in terms of, especially for a younger LGBTQI folks, things are really, really tough. Discrimination, violence often comes from family and intimate like surroundings, and at school especially. So yeah, to be an LGBTQI person in Mongolia, especially a young LGBTQI person, and or a young trans person or gender diverse person, it's very tough. These laws don't protect them, basically. Yeah,
that's sad to hear. So definitely a whole lot of work to do.
Whole lot.
So is it the same in a way, the reason for the current societal situation, if you will, it's because is Mongolia a more traditional society, or are there religious, more conservative religions that, you know, influence just the wider society around this?
You know, we are predominantly Buddhist country, but this is my personal opinion and my personal observation of Mongolia. We are not Buddhist like Nepal or Tibet. We are not a very practicing Buddhist. I there may be people who may disagree with me, but in general.
Okay. I suppose because I was just reading up, you know, you have a couple of interviews out there and what I've read about Mongolia. And I have this impression that there's some conservative Christians there as well.
Oh, yes, absolutely. Yeah. They are there.
Yeah.
Mongolian people are practicing various forms of religion. Yeah. And yes, Christian rights groups, far rights are here, of course. But also at the same time, Christian people are discriminated as well. So I don't know. I just wanted to mention that.
Sure, of course. Of course.
But what's really troubling is a lot of Christian rights-based anti-gender propaganda are being imported to Mongolia. So that's very challenging. You know, there's very high quality interviews being translated into Mongolian, long articles written in a very traditional way. You know, we can definitely, as activists, as frontline people, we can definitely identify whose work is whose. And then we can tell it's a Christian right work. And we do also receive attack from them directly. I could give you one example. LGBT Center has been organizing Pride in Mongolia since 2013.
Yes.
And one of the event of our Pride is film festival.
Yes.
So we want to
open.
Yeah, it's called Beyond the Blue Sky. And anytime we organize, we want to occupy public spaces, like public theater. Yeah. So a couple of years ago, the theater, the cinema, who had a contract with us, they received a lot of threatening calls. At the same time, we received a lot of hate speech and attacks on social media, like on our private message and organization message and posts and all that. So we learned that they were Christian mothers. So the cinema stopped partnering with us since then.
Oh my goodness.
So that is the impact, you know. And for our city and in our advocacy work, we also always want to get a safe neighborhood, safe space. And these are very few. So we lost a very important space. So it doesn't matter if we have the money or not, if we have the funding or not, we just cannot access these spaces, space anymore. So, yeah.
Yeah, or even the loss, right, on your side. I confess that that was the leading question, because I think that's the right reality globally, well, especially in the United States, that a lot of the anti-LGBT hate comes from the conservative religious right. And a lot of the funding globally originates from America and is exported to all over the world. So, but to lighten the mood a little, I was reading your interview and give out, and you described how queer people call each other in Mongolia. Can you tell our listeners what it is and how it is used?
Oh, okay.
Yeah, I loved it. I love it when I read it. It's like, wow.
So this is a adopted word. It's Eng.
Eng, okay.
It's called Eng. It direct translation means class, but not in the sense of like class status, but like in the sense of classroom. So back in the day when it was very, very hard for LGBTQ, when I say back in the day, like 20 years ago, queer people, we didn't have enough safe space to have a cultural life, social life. Yeah. So, so what happens is the history of this word, from what we gathered through our archive, is if you sit in a, if you in a heterosexual cis space, sitting with your queer friends, there is a chance of like running into your colleague or your family member. So often they would ask like, who are these people? And you would say, oh, they're my classmates. So nobody questions that further. Yeah. So it is a community safe word. It's been a community safe word for a really, really long time. But now it is being used very, like a lot of people know this now. It's not like a secret word.
Sure, sure.
So allies know this. Allies refer to queer communities like Eng, you know.
Oh, I love it. Or I love it. Yeah.
This is sometimes how the this word is being used. People would say, when I first entered Eng.
Ah, okay.
Or like, are you Eng, you know?
Yeah.
So it's like a really nice adopted word.
Yeah. Yeah. It's amazing how, I guess, at the start of any LGBT movement globally, right, we need to find these safe spaces and these safe words. I mean, now, just for the sake of the listeners, this is way before my time. But I believe in the U.S., it used to be, you know, Judy or Friends of Judy or, you know, for Judy Garland and all that. So, but I guess that's a topic for another podcast, like just slangs, right? Like queer slangs in Mongolia, because every country has their own. But what's interesting is that eventually mainstream society, particularly young ones, adopt these slangs, don't they?
Yeah, they do.
Okay, well, thank you for that. So just a little bit of your history. So I understand your parents immigrated to the U.S. and brought them with you. So how did you find your way back to Mongolia? And to running an LGBT center of all things?
Oh, so I moved to California, Oakland, California, when I was 16. And I haven't visited Mongolia for many years. But while I was in the Bay Area, I was pretty involved in civil society.
Yes.
And like mostly in like providing interpretation on domestic violence cases and things like that. Anyways, so my interest has always been on the justice sector. But when I was reaching my 30 years, I've decided to come to Mongolia for 3 months. And I reached out to National Center Against Domestic Violence. It's a very established NGO here in Mongolia. So as a queer person, I reached out to them. I want to volunteer because, I left the country when I was 16. I don't have friends here. I don't know. Most of my adult life was spent in Oakland, California. And so I wanted to know about Mongolia. So as a queer person coming to anywhere, always searching for where the queer people at.
Yes.
And so I Googled LGBT center, and what I found was very impressive. So I reached out to LGBT center. I want to come visit. And so they were very welcome. And I met an amazing activist, the founder of LGBT center, who's a trans man. His name is Anara Nimdorj. Later he became my friend, and he passed a couple of years ago. Anyways, Anara inspired the shit out of me. And of course the LGBT centers work and that the activists at the time, and I was extremely impressed and fell in love, and then also realized that this was the first time I ever felt sense of belonging at the LGBT center. Like only at the LGBT center I felt true sense of belonging. And yeah, so I went back to Bay Area, but I kept in contact with the center, volunteered from a distance, tried raising funds for the center, then eventually invited as a board. Then there was an, after 4 years, like I came to the center in 2015, and after 4 years, there was a job opening. So I applied very nervously, applied as a health program coordinator, and they welcomed me. So I basically wrapped up my 17 years of life in a few boxes and moved back to Mongolia.
Oh my goodness.
And yeah, so here I am as the ED of the center for
Yes.
the past 6 years.
And that you've done an amazing job. And now I appreciate what you're saying about the center, because as you know, I sit on the board of the LGBT Center in New York, and it is crucial, even here to this very day, right? In New York City, the center is still a safe space, and I'd imagine anywhere else in the world. So speaking of the center, because you know the center, your center has accomplished amazing milestones since its founding in 2007, including the celebration of the first International Day Against Homophobia and Transphobia in 2011, and also holding the inaugural Pride Week in 2013. So what have been some of, for you, the highlights since you became full-time at the center? Because I know if anyone goes to your website and just looks through the historical timeline, it is super impressive.
Thank you. Thank you. Oh, so I inherited an amazing structure. The LGBT Center has done just incredible work, like you said. For me personally, in the past 6 years, few things I'm very proud of, or yeah. I keep very close to heart is one of them is when I and my team we strategically develop programs to support or empower our trans community. So for 2 consecutive years, we organized a 6-month-long trans leadership program. So this includes like various like trainings and small projects and community organizing. And so before I say this, before I continue, the LGBT Center has been the only LGBTQI human rights organization in the country for a really, really long time. So because we've done this, it's not only these two years of project, but strategically ensured that trans people were our priority. So last year in 2024, our first trans-led civil society organization was formed. And these folks are graduates of this program, and they're doing amazing work right now. The organization is called Trans for Unity. They are super creative, very young people. They impress me every day and inspire me every day. So when you do advocacy work, it's the result. You don't know when to actually see it. You anticipate it, but sometimes it don't come, right? So, but this effort of prioritizing strategically our trans community really gave its fruits, I would say. So it's very beautiful to me. Another one is the center has been doing engaging with the UN mechanism since its establishment, and we have obtained more than like 80 LGBTQS specific recommendations from various treaty bodies, UPR and Human Rights Council. So I myself in the past 6 years engaged with CEDAW, Convention on the Elimination of Discrimination Against Women. Another one.
Acronyms.
Yes, another one. CESCAR, like Covenant on Economic, Social, and Cultural Rights, Covenant on Civil Political Rights, UPR, 2 cycles, yada, yada, yada.
And I love that New Yorkism there, the yada, yada, yada. You definitely speak a number of languages, my friend.
Yes, and for me, I want to also share that, you know, my academic background is in women and gender studies. I am not a lawyer. I don't have a lot of legal background. And UN mechanism is quite intimidating. And I personally have learned a lot on the job. And I can now call myself a decent expert on the subject matter.
Yes.
And I just want to, I want to share this because anybody who's listening in, who may be intimidated by certain subjects or certain institutions, don't be. You will get it on the job, and you don't really have to like go to school to like know about all of these things.
Yes.
Yeah. So this is something I'm quite proud of, personally.
Well, it's rather impressive, and clearly that your work goes beyond Mongolia, goes beyond Asia. It's global, right, from your work at the UN, because clearly that will reverberate. And really, I do mean this thank you. I think we owe you and other activists that thanks, right? And I appreciate what you're saying about, you know, don't be intimidated by titles or by degrees, but clearly your passion and your commitment where it was enabled you to do all these wonderful things.
Yes, I think so. Lots of mistake, but you know, a lot of reading, writing, and support. Not, you know, asking for support from experts, friends, whoever maybe. You know, looking for those networks. Yeah.
Okay, I have, you know, one thing, a question that might be surprising to you, but I will ask, because One thing I heard a lot during the Safer to Be conference, and also I suppose if you're in UN spaces and other more international bodies, the use of soji instead of LGBT, because, you know, throughout my long life here, it's usually LGBT, LGBTQ, LGBTQIA, etc. So for our listeners who might not know what soji is, do you mind enlightening us?
Okay.
Right? It's surprising because I'd imagine you take it for granted, correct?
Yes, yes. Yeah. So soji is an abbreviation of sexual orientation and gender identity. Mm-hmm. And a couple of things I always tell to people, this soji is sexual orientation and gender identity is not a specific term for sexual and gender minority. Mm-hmm. Everybody has sexual orientation and gender minority. Mm-hmm. 8 billion of us, all of us, we have them. And they are not interchangeable. They are two separate, independent context, or I don't know, I guess I could say context, yeah?
Yeah.
Yeah. In my experience of advocacy, I could tell a lot of people think soji is only related to sexual, you know, gender minority. And maybe if you're not part of the community, not part of the LGBTQ community, if you're a cis straight person, maybe ask yourself, why have you never, you know, like, what's your sexual orientation and what's your gender identity? Mm-hmm. And yeah, and then it's important to actually acknowledge what privileges comes with your cis identity, with your hetero identity and all that. Yeah. LGBTQI plus, it's lesbian, gay, bisexual, transgender, intersex, and more.
Yeah, in a way, or I prefer the term queer personally, because it's encompassing, right? And queer, too, in my mind, can include, cisgender individuals who might necessarily follow the norm or whatever the norms are. But it just made me wonder that maybe soji or soji might be a good way of reframing the conversation to your point that telling our straight siblings that no, we all have sexual orientations and gender identities. Yeah. And we, we're no different.
Yes. Yeah. Like one example is when you reform your applications to be more gender sensitive, don't just put like men and women, LGBTQI. Mm-hmm. That is, again, it's, you are trying, thank you for trying, but instead you could just ask what's your sexual orientation and, you know, list the different diverse sexual orientation. Mm-hmm. What's your gender identity? Mm-hmm. Do not other us more than what it is now.
Right.
Do not put us into just one little box, LGBTQI. Yes, we are one community, but each letter is a community.
Correct.
You know, I think that needs to be discussed more. A lot of places are trying to be gender sensitive, which is great, but without consulting with LGBTQI activists, you're not doing enough justice to your work. So always, always consult with us, you know.
Yes.
I have come to many meetings where the organizers or the key decision makers hire the gender expert, but these gender experts have a very narrow binary gender, you know, analysis or...
Yes.
Not inclusive enough.
Mm-hmm.
So that kind of things really annoys me in my advocacy.
Sure.
Especially like what I see often is like development projects, you know, big long-term project that comes into developing countries.
Yes.
For 5 years, 10 years. But if you are not careful, if you're not inclusive, if your gender analysis is not inclusive, you are actually perpetuating stereotypes. You are perpetuating gender norm. So this is something I bring up to consultancy meetings with big organizations like ADB,
Asian Development Bank.
And, that's just an example.
Yeah. Of course.
Yeah.
No. I confess that something, even as a member of the LGBTQTI, community, but being part of the G community, I had to educate myself too around it, and I still work at it. And I think the key takeaway here for all of us is just, it's simple. Ask someone how they identify. With their sexual or gender identity, even race, ethnicity, however it is, right? It's as simple as that. I think, and I know we definitely have a long way to go, even within the community. And so you sort of alluded to that. And if we were to be honest, including here in the United States, that yes, we're one community, but there is the L, the G, the B, the T. And if we even think of the T or the others. So is there that same, if you will, division or separation in Mongolia? Or because the community is smaller, then it's more cohesive?
I would say more cohesive.
That's wonderful.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, more cohesive. One example is in Ulaanbaatar City. Mm-hmm. Currently, there are 5 queer pubs and clubs. Mm-hmm. Any one of them you walk in, you see diverse community. So I think that says a lot.
I think so, because it always amazed me. So I moved to New York 35 years ago, and aging myself here. But then, it always surprised me once I leave the city and go to smaller cities or towns in the U.S. that, the bars are pretty mixed. But here you've got the bars and the club spaces for gay men in particular. Then you break it down by race, by club. Mm-hmm. Then you have one for women, et cetera, et cetera. Mm-hmm. Right. So in other words, we all have a lot to work on, right?
Well, yes, absolutely. Now. Yes. Like San Francisco Castro, it's a very, very gay district.
Yes.
Very specific gay district. Mm-hmm.
You know? Correct. Yeah.
White, fit, groomed, more money. And if you are like a person of color, it's hard to be in that space, like that. But here, I think Mongolia is pretty cohesive.
That's wonderful. That's wonderful, because that has been my experience, right? As a smaller, shorter, brown gay man. Right? I mean, things are moving, but still, you still have to fit that mold, right? Which is, in a way, kind of sad, because we're fighting against that in larger society, but then we do put ourselves in boxes as well and in our community. But anyway, that's a topic for another.
Yeah, that's a topic for another.
But Irvin,
I just want to add one more point to the LGBTQI+ community.
Yeah.
L is just like an independent community.
Yes.
But this is just the first layer, We're not talking about any intersectionality here, like intersecting identities. We have so much work to do, so far to go. But I just wanted to note it here. Yeah.
No, and I'm glad you did, because that is, I think, an issue. Speaking from my own experience in America, right? Because there are. It's more than just one identity, to your point. You have to do your identity as a mother, your in family, your work, a number of things that does matter, right? Mm-hmm. And I think, I think we certainly have a lot of work to go on. But maybe, okay, at the risk and a risk of sounding like a tried job interview, I hate this question, but I will ask you, where do you find yourself 5 years from now?
Oh, wow. 5 years from now. I'm going to be honest with you. It's not going to be very inspiring.
Okay.
So all over the world, frontline activists burned out.
Yes.
They are so tired. I'm one of them.
Mm.
I have been actively upfront for 7 years and I'm extremely tired.
Mm.
But show must go on.
Yes.
So this is my dream. I don't know. I just have this tendency of like running away, you know, like be in the woods. And so I want to live in the countryside, to be honest.
Okay.
I want to live in the countryside and I don't know. I want to work on waste management in the countryside. This is just my dream at the moment.
Sure.
I do have certain plans to do it. Of course, I would be supporting the center with whatever I got, you know, the skills and I've accumulated a lot of skills and knowledge here. So definitely be with the movement. But personally, I want to be in the countryside with my dog and my partner and picking garbage and not talking to people.
Okay. Well, if you know, when that time comes, and if I do see you, I will remind you as you pick garbage and help out not to be an activist in that space.
No, like in my dream, I am an activist, waste management activist.
No, I guess I'm just saying that because an activist will always, it's in your heart,
yeah,
right, to make a difference, yeah, to lead. So
yeah, I think I'm doomed on that.
Okay, but I will remind you if I do see you a few years from now.
Thank you.
Well, my last question, and again, thank you for staying up late for me and for our listeners. So what would you tell those listening in, especially young queer people, not just in Mongolia, but globally in this current climate, which we both know can be difficult?
Yeah, I think number one thing is your safety and security. I think a lot of different country people listen to your podcast. Yeah. So do a security measure, like make a good plan to come out. Especially if you are living with your parents, if you are solely dependent on your family members, you will grow up and you will be independent. There will be a time you will make decisions for yourself.
Mm-hmm.
But don't risk too much to come out if the situation is tough at home.
Mm-hmm.
I would suggest maybe going to a community organization, have like a counseling, make your coming out well planned. Because your safety and security is very important. Also, you may not like this, but your caregivers, your parents, they decide, in some countries, they decide whether to send you to university or not, you know,
mm-hmm.
or whether to do, like they make a lot of decision for you right now. So be very smart about it.
Mm-hmm.
Don't do it compulsively. Mm-hmm. The risk is great. So that's what I would say.
Mm.
Yeah.
Well, thank you. You know, that is very wise and very practical. It's easier, I suppose, for those of us who have achieved it or live in countries where there is more freedom and there's support. Mm. But even here, though, right, we still get a lot of young kids who are thrown out and find themselves at wit's end and not knowing what to do.
Mm.
So, Ingma, thank you so much for joining us and for all that you do for our queer siblings in Mongolia and beyond. Thank you. Thank you. For our listeners, you can learn more about the LGBT Center at LGBT Center, spelled the English way, CENTRE.MN. Until next time, I'm Erwin De Leon, and this is Living Queer. Be strong and true, and always choose life and joy. Thank you.
Thank you.